President-elect Jim Kim, an adopted member of the class of 82, I understand now, will be the 17th Dartmouth president in the Wheelock succession and the third president in a row named Jim. He's chair of the Department of Global Health and Social Medicine at Harvard Med School, where he teaches both graduate and undergraduate courses and has done that throughout a good deal of his career. He's a former director of the World Health Organization, a co-founder of Partners in Health, an organization that provides health services to some of the poorest countries in the world. He has a PhD in anthropology and an MD from Harvard. He did his undergraduate work at Brown. He immigrated to the U.S. from Korea when he was 5 and ended up in Muscatine, Iowa, where he was a quarterback on the high school football team, valedictorian of his class, and president of his class. His wife, Dr. Yoon-suk Lim, and he have 2 sons, 8, and 1 is 3.5 months old, if my 2 months old, if my calculations are correct. So without further ado, welcome, President.
Thank you. Well, you know, I can't tell you how excited I am to be here. And let me just start by saying that you are the reason that I'm here. You know, I had never thought about, you know, frankly, I hadn't thought much about career path over the last 20 years and have almost been solely focused on trying to do things rather than trying to be something. And the projects that I've taken on have taken me all over the world, from Tomsk in Siberia to the shanty towns of Lima, Peru, to Haiti, and now most recently all over Africa. So when Al Mulley, who I just met last summer, I mean, you know, we've been on the faculty for a very long time together, but I just met him last summer. When he asked me to think about this job, I quite literally said, why would they ever want me to be president of Dartmouth College? I mean, and nothing about Dartmouth College, but about me. Why would they want me to be president of Dartmouth College? I'd never done anything that suggested that was in my career plans. And Al just kept saying, well, you know, just take a look at it. And my mentors had always said to me, one of my mentors, Howard Hyatt in particular, said that if any institution honors you with asking you to look at an important job, it's your responsibility as a member of the academic community to go and talk to them. Because even if they don't choose you, and even if you decide you don't want the job, you'll help them think about what they really want. So that's why I did it. I just started talking, and literally every meeting that I walked into, I said, you know, I'm so thrilled that you're talking to me, but I don't know why you're talking to me. And I'll talk a little bit more about the argument I made as to why I wanted to do this job. But let me tell you a little bit about how I got here and why I'm so excited to be here. I started out at the University of Iowa, and I only applied to 2 schools for transfer, Brown and Harvard, and I didn't know about Dartmouth. That's one of the things that we need to work on. I didn't know about the educational experience that you all went through and that I'm so excited to get engaged in. So I went to Brown, and I struggled a lot with who I was, Korean-American, you know. It was the classic Korean-American Iowan upbringing that I went through. And so burdened with that, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what it meant. You know, a lot of people, you know, the 18 to 22-year-old period is where everyone has their identity crisis. And most people resolve their identity crisis pretty easily. I had to get a PhD in anthropology to resolve my identity crisis. But in the process, what I learned was that it wasn't ethnicity or racial background that was most important to me. It was working on things that I really cared about, like healthcare for the poor, like making sure that no mother was not able to feed their own children. That's what I've been doing for the last 20 years. So when Al asked me to look at Dartmouth, I tried to do what those of us in medicine, evidence-based medicine who believe in that, always try to do. I did research. So I actually called up one of my very close friends who I've been working with for 20 years, who was 93, And this is a guy who was a philosophy major. He rode crew and is one of the most brilliant young people I've ever worked with. He's one of these people who, you know, in talking about FDR, they said he had a first-class temperament and a second-class mind. This guy has a first-class mind and a first-class temperament. And I said, what, you know, tell me about Dartmouth. And he had never done it before. But when he heard that I was part of the presidential search, all of this stuff came out. You know, I knew he went to Dartmouth, and I knew he was crazy about it, but he was shy about talking about just how much he loved it until this came up. And, you know, sort of tears came to his eyes, and he talked about this great, fantastic experience that he had, and I frankly didn't believe him at first. So I said, well, tell me about it. And he was so excited about the possibility that he actually sneaked back up to Hanover to find out what was going on campus. And then he wrote me I probably have 50 pages from him telling me about what's so special about Dartmouth. And then I started talking to other people, and the same thing. I'd say, you know, I'm learning about Dartmouth, and there's something that's crazy that happens whenever I talk to Dartmouth grads. And at some point, tears come to their eyes. And that's just when tears would come to their eyes. So I knew that this was really special. Now, you know, people who are, you know, either alums or students at Harvard, they cry, but usually when they're going to Harvard, they cry. So students of mine cry all the time. But the alums, when you talk to them about the experience, and I, you know, the people I know are Harvard and Brown alums, don't get this overwhelming emotional sense of a special experience, the best friends that they've ever had, you know, a fantastic exposure to great professors. It was something different. And so I talked about this during the search committee meetings. I said, you know, there's just something very unique about that place. And so finally, it all came home when I met an 82 who's now head of psychiatry at Partners, who is a neuropsychiatrist who does functional imaging studies of the brain. So I said, here's what I think happens at Dartmouth that makes it so special. One, the research in neuropsychiatry suggests that being in a natural environment is actually really important in terms of ability to concentrate, focus, and learn. So they're doing studies now where they take a building in Manhattan, half of which looks out on the park and half of which looks out on concrete, and they're actually measuring real differences in ability to retain information. So it turns out, and as an anthropologist, you know, unless you are able to read the natural environment and act effectively, you got eaten by saber-toothed tigers, right? So there's something about our brain development that being in a natural environment actually impacts. But then the other part of it is the intensity of social interaction. You cannot come to Dartmouth and bleed out into Boston or bleed out into New York. You have to deal with your classmates. And I think the fraternities and sororities have played a critical role in enhancing that experience. I think that as an anthropologist, if you look at social groups all over the world, try to find groups of 20 or 30 people that really come get close together, know everything about each other, and stay together forever. We know that that is really important between 18 and 22. And we also know that having those kinds of close friendships has a direct impact on longevity. That's what the data seems to suggest now. Having close friends that you've developed at a young age that you keep forever is very important for longevity. So there's the social interaction piece. And finally, there's this access to tenured professors. You know, I didn't really get a lot of that when I was at Brown. You definitely don't get that when you're at Harvard. And the ability to walk into the office of a tenured professor who's been studying this stuff and teaching it forever and being able to have those conversations, it's extraordinary. One alum who was a first-generation college student began talking to me about his physics professor. And once again, tears started coming to his eyes. And he's an owner of a huge company, you know, a very wealthy man. And he told me about his experience with President Kemeny. And when he started talking about it, it was as if he was right there again. He said, you know, I was a senior and I didn't have anything to do, so I went to a baseball game. And there was President Kemeny sitting right there. And you know, I just went and sat next to him and he talked to me, right? So those three things together, I think, make this just an absolutely unique experience. Are there other schools that approach this? Maybe. But I've never seen one that approaches it in the way that Dartmouth has. and that makes it such an emotive experience. So my friend that's a psychiatrist says that he thinks there's actually changes in the brain. So I've got this great fantasy. Next time I see you, I'm going to show you slides. Here's your brain. Here's your brain on Dartmouth. All right? When I learned about this, it made me think very differently about my own life. Because I'll be honest with you. I mean, you know, this is all going to be resolved fairly soon. The day after Al came to me and said, okay, if you're going to take the job, we're ready to make an offer. Literally days after that, I got a call from a certain very high-ranking official in a certain government just down the road. They offered me really a dream job to do things at a very high level that I've been doing my whole life. And so the question for me was very clear. Do I continue to throw my own body at these problems and try as an individual to make a difference? Or do I come here and have an impact and have an opportunity to tweak, to improve, to understand that process which made you who you are, and that is so special that you cry in your 50s, 60s, and 70s. And the conclusion I came to was that the chance to impact thousands of young people, to make this experience even better, to make this experience even more memorable, to set them off on a path to tackle these problems, is going to be much more impactful than anything I could do as an individual. So that's why I'm here. I don't know enough about Dartmouth yet to be able to tell you what I'm going to do, what I'm going to try to do the next year. I'm going to spend listening, especially to all of you. But I think that's what we can do together. I think that no matter what field they choose, some people say, well, you know, as a physician and a person working on social justice issues, are you going to want all the undergraduates to go into those fields? And I say, only if I want Dartmouth to be financially ruined in a few years. It doesn't matter at all to me what people go into. And frankly, it doesn't matter at all to me whether they come out here believing that they're a conservative or a liberal. They just need to know why they believe the way they do. I think we have an opportunity to let all different viewpoints bubble themselves up. Because I can tell you, having worked on problems that really required me to work with, you know, Senator Richard Lugar and President Bush on AIDS issues, unless you really understand the wide variety of opinions and why they have those opinions, you're not going to be very effective when you go out in the world. If you have an opinion and you're isolated among the people who only agree with you and you don't have a chance to really firm up your reasons for believing the way you do, I think you're not well served. So we want to train just the most extraordinary group of people who may take on HIV and tuberculosis the way I have, who may go into the financial world like so many others have. It doesn't matter. But we want them to be so well trained, to be so excited, to feel that there is no problem in the world that they can't take on, grab in their teeth, and fix. I think that's what we want to do. I think John Sloan Dickey said it as well as any American college president ever. The world's troubles are your troubles, but I've never seen a problem that better human beings can't fix. And that's what I hope to do together with all of you. Thank you very much.